I'm Marty Moscow-Wain. Welcome to Radio Times. 3 months after the Capitol insurrection, there are many lingering questions about how this violent attack on our government could have happened. Our guests, correspondent A.C. Thompson and director Rick Rowley, traced the beginnings to the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, almost 4 years ago. Their new film, American Insurrection, is a collaboration between Frontline, ProPublica, and UC Berkeley's investigative reporting program. It follows the activities of the Proud Boys, the Boogaloo Boys, white nationalists, and neo-Nazi groups as their leaders and followers become more radicalized, calling for the overthrow of the government, whether in Michigan or Washington, D.C. They were emboldened by President Trump, who claimed falsely that the 2020 election was stolen from them. The documentary is streaming free to everyone on the Frontline website. Thompson and Rowley join us on Radio Times to talk with us about the rise of these domestic terrorist groups and the threat they pose. A.C. Thompson is senior reporter for ProPublica, a correspondent for Frontline, and has been reporting on hate violence and neo-Nazis since the 1990s. In fact, he was a guest on Radio Times shortly after Charlottesville. A.C. Thompson, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome. Also with us, as I mentioned, Rick Rowley. He is an Oscar-nominated, Emmy-winning director, reported on the Iraq War, joining us by Skype. And Rick Rowley, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. A.C. Thompson, let me begin with you, because there is nothing new about neo-Nazis or white supremacist groups or militias in this country. What is unique about this latest generation, either the leaders or the followers?
You know, it's really interesting. I think one of the things that struck Rick and I, because Rick has been on this story for many, many years as well, is in this modern era, how easy it is for white supremacists, neo-Nazis, and other extremists to network, to proselytize, to communicate, and to build a following. And, you know, just a decade ago, that was a much more difficult thing to do. And if you look back to the times when these movements were quite big in the 80s and 90s, it was almost impossible to do. So social media has given these groups a way to build a following, to build a movement, to communicate that they never had before. And that's really one of the things that has enabled their rise. I mean, the other thing that really, I think, when we talk to people, they say is a catalyst, is they say that Donald Trump has been a catalyst. When we interview people in these movements, whether it's the white supremacist movement or the militia movement, they'll say, look, Donald Trump was saying things that I was thinking, but I didn't feel like I could say publicly. Or they say, Donald Trump, I realize, is an ally. He is a guy who believes 80 or 90% of the same things I do.
Rick Rowley, let me go to you and go back a couple of years, almost 4 years ago, to Charlottesville, which is, in a sense, where this documentary begins. So tracing the beginning of what led to the insurrection of a couple of months ago, why Charlottesville and why you think this place was chosen and why you see this as the start of this movement, of this, I guess, chapter in this movement?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's incredibly important to look at the way, I mean, it's easy to look at these movements as just a monolith. As you say, we've always had neo-Nazis, we've had militias for a long time, but they have gone through generational changes. They've adapted and exploited the different political crises that we faced over the past decades. And, you know, the Trump era is kind of unique. You know, the Charlottesville and January 6th are bookends and inflection points and markers on a road of an evolving movement that is pushing deeper into the mainstream than we've ever seen it in our lifetime. So we begin in Charlottesville, you know, 7 months into the Trump presidency, this massive explosion of white supremacist marchers violently onto the street, the largest white supremacist demonstration in, you know, a generation. There was a twofold kind of response to it. The first was there was actually a very effective backlash against the overt white supremacist groups that organized it and they were marching in the street. They were the groups that planned it, you know, splintered, you know, were hounded by activists whenever they tried to appear in the street, were tracked down online by online activists, were hit with civil lawsuits. They changed their names, splintered, kind of disappeared. But two other things happened there. One is that an element inside the far right saw that as a signal that they needed to go underground and become more extremist and militant and violent. Another important and larger section of that movement saw in Donald Trump's response, they saw an opportunity to take off their swastikas, wrap themselves in American flags, and found a pathway into the mainstream. And so a key group in that journey is the Proud Boys who posture as not a racist white supremacist organization, even though white supremacy is kind of written into their organizational structure and their bylaws and their idea of what they are. But that's how they posture themselves. And they became, you know, AC uncovered, you know, an important overlap between Proud Boy membership and former neo-Nazis who were seeing them as a vehicle to gain a kind of following that they had never been able to find in the last, you know, few decades.
And I do want to pick up on that. Let me go back to you, AC Thompson, because you were in Charlottesville. You covered this rally. And one of the things that you say in this documentary is that you had never seen white supremacists in such large numbers. You know, they were out there so that we could all see exactly what they looked like. Why were they so emboldened?
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of that goes back to the Trump phenomenon. And what we saw, the reason I got onto this beat again, you know, I had covered neo-Nazis back in the 1990s, and then I did cover hate crimes. And I got back onto the sort of white radical extremist beat because in 2015, I saw all these ideas and all these slogans and all these groups resurfacing that had kind of gone dormant. And so many of them said, hey, we're on the Trump train. We are down with Trump. Trump is our guy. And I really think that that was a key piece of it. You know, if you were to look at this very popular neo-Nazi website called the Daily Stormer during that time period, the first Trump campaign, it was Donald Trump every day. That was all over it. And I'm not saying by any means that all Trump supporters are neo-Nazis or white supremacists or anything.
Sure.
I'm simply saying, like, for that movement, they'd always been at a remove from mainstream politics. You know, they were never very excited about Republicans or Democrats at all. But Trump was different.
Well, you know what? Let me play, and, you know, I'm sure our listeners have heard this before or heard pieces of this before, but this is President Trump. This goes back to summer of, 2017. He's defending the white supremacists in Charlottesville, saying essentially, you know, both sides were equally culpable for the violent confrontation, actually led to the death of a young woman and also the injury of 19 others. It's a little more than a minute. Let's just give it a quick listen.
And white supremacists on the same moral plane.
I'm not putting anybody on a moral plane. What I'm saying is this. You had a group on one side and you had a group on the other, and they came at each other with clubs, and it was vicious, and it was horrible, and it was a horrible thing to watch. But there is another side. There was a group on this side, you can call them the left, you've just called them the left, that came violently attacking the other group. So you can say what you want, but that's the way it is.
I think there's blame on both sides.
And I have no doubt about it, and you don't have any doubt about it either.
And
if you reported it accurately, you would say.
They showed up in Charlottesville to protest, and
you had some very bad people in that group. But you also had people that were very fine people on both sides.
Rick Rowley, getting into the head of a white supremacist or a Proud Boy, when they heard that coming from the President of the United States, what was the message to them?
Yeah, we don't even have to get into their heads because they came out explicitly and talked about it afterwards. They saw that as the biggest endorsement that it was possible for the president to make of them. And, you know, and this whole idea, I mean, that is, you know, an important moment in what became was vastly accelerated by Trump, a rhetorical move that he made all throughout 2020, which was to create this massive enemy in you know, BLM and Antifa. I mean, basically, that one of the centerpieces of his whole 2020 campaign was this idea that there was this dangerous group of communists who were going to destroy everything you loved about this country and take over your cities if you lost. And that rallying cry was used to mobilize, you know, these street vigilantes like the Proud Boys, who took that took up that rallying cry and then engaged in political violence across the country for, you know, much of the summer leading up to the Capitol. And then on January 6th, an important and interesting thing, that a striking thing about what happened at the Capitol, was the transformation of these movements that had been vigilante movements that saw themselves as, you know, brown shirts or you know, street fighters in service of this kind of Trumpian politics. You know, we had seen them marching over and over again in the summer with Blue Lives Matter flags or thin blue line patches on their plate carriers, you know, chanting back the blue and you know, acting as a force of law and order, right? And then on January 6th, I mean, actually, over the course of a series of protests that we, you know, were watching in D.C. Beginning in November, they slowly transformed and became more and more confrontational to the police. Till it, by the time January 6th came around, they were not wearing their uniforms. They had thrown away their Blue Lives Matter flags, and they joined a riot that, you know, wounded 140 police officers and resulted in the death of Officer Sicknick. So that. January 6th marked this other inflection point where one part of the movement, which saw itself as far right vigilantes, was transformed into an insurrectionary group that was now opposed to the police and the government and looking to overthrow it.
And A.C. Thompson, just picking up on that, and we're about a minute or so from our first break here. So how do you go from, you know, back the blue to beating members of Capitol Police on January 6th?
You know, I think our consulting producer, Ford Fisher, said it absolutely correctly in the film. And what he says is, you know, these guys are all pro-police, they're pro-establishment, pro-government, until it looks like that government is going to change and Joseph Biden is going to be our president. And then, because of the lies that they've been fed, the propaganda they've been fed, they perceive this incoming government to be illegitimate, and they consider the police and those supporting it to be illegitimate. And so suddenly they are at war with the police.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. That's A.C. Thompson. He's a senior reporter with ProPublica, also a correspondent for Frontline, and he has been reporting on hate violence and neo-Nazi groups since the 1990s. He joins us along with Rick Rowley. He's an Oscar-nominated, Emmy-winning film director. He reported on the Iraq War, and we're talking about their new documentary called American Insurrection, aired this week on PBS and on TV 12. You can stream it on the Frontline website. And we are talking about the various groups and people that they talk to in putting this documentary together, what it tells us about hate groups in this country and the threat that they pose. You can join us. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can call us, that phone number, 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking with filmmakers A.C. Thompson and Rick Rowley about their new documentary, American Insurrection. Let me play another clip, or let me play actually our first clip from the documentary, and this is A.C. Thompson, our guest. He's speaking with former Proud Boy Brian James about his ideology, which he calls civic nationalism. Let's give it a listen.
And as a civic nationalist, what are your issues? What are your bedrock beliefs?
Individual liberty and adhering to the Constitution as much as possible. I don't like this climate where we take away accountability, where we try to force equality of outcomes instead of equal opportunity. I don't like cancel culture and political correctness to a large extent. People see the left as taking over and moving society in a certain direction. So we're just the ones that are the tip of the spear out standing up for that physically.
A.C. Thompson, talking about Brian James, he was a skinhead leader. He actually left the white power movement. He even told you he thought Charlottesville was a mistake. What do we need to know about him? What is he telling us about civic nationalism?
You know, so Brian James is, as you said, a former neo-Nazi skinhead leader. He was the leader of two of the most violent, most chaotic skinhead gangs in American history. And in recent years, he has adopted a slightly different outlook. And this is really a worldview kind of shared by many other Proud Boys like himself, which says, you know, is basically a slight retooling of the sort of white supremacist worldview, which makes it kind of white supremacist adjacent. And when I talked to Brian, what he said his issues were immigration. As he says there, he's very down on affirmative action. He was very upset about COVID restrictions. But what you really get to when you see these guys out in the streets, the Proud Boys, and you spend time on their social media channels is things that get pretty scary pretty quickly. And so in the film, there's a scene where I go and try to interview a Proud Boy who's wearing a T-shirt that says Pinochet did nothing wrong.
Yeah, I saw that.
Right. So that is actually a playoff of an old neo-Nazi skinhead thing where there were T-shirts that said Hitler did nothing wrong in the 80s and 1990s. So now we have an update and we have Pinochet, the Chilean fascist dictator, being revered. When you look at the social media for groups like the Proud Boys and you look at their web store, they're selling things that are T-shirts about throwing leftists out of helicopters, which is a thing that happened in Chile and in Argentina. They are selling T-shirts that say right-wing death squad. So there's a lot of very aggressive, very fashy ideas circulating there. But really what you get is a move to targeting people because of their ethnicity and race to be your scapegoats, to basically targeting people because you don't agree with their political ideology and you believe that they're part of some leftist, vast leftist conspiracy to ruin America. And I think that's really what you get out of these groups.
I mean, that is scary. Rick Rally, let me just frame a question for you, but I do want to hear from you because as you describe the Proud Boys in this documentary, it does include they have black members, they have Latino members. In certain, one of them, or one of perhaps it was you, A.C. Thompson, you know, it's drinking, fighting, and Trump. You've got these Pinochet T-shirts. You've got right-wing death squad T-shirts. How seriously do we take these? A group like the Proud Boys?
Yeah, you know, when we first saw them emerge, I mean, I think, you know, all of us looked at them as kind of a joke. You know, is not a particularly serious part of a movement that had much more dangerous players in it. But after Charlottesville, they became a conduit and a vehicle through which white supremacists and people like Brian James could find a path into the mainstream. And, you know, it's important to say about, you know, when you watch the film, you'll see the whole interview with Brian James, that this is a tactical choice he's making. He makes it very clear. He regrets Charlottesville. Like in the entire interview, we spent 2 hours with him. Not once did he express any regret for the murder of Heather Heyer or for all of the people that were murdered by the skinhead gangs that he led at different times. Not once does he express a moment of remorse about that. The reason he says it's a mistake was it was a tactical mistake that hurt them politically, and that he realized after that, or it made clearer to him something that he'd started to make before, that it is just politically more effective to take off your Nazi, your swastika armband and wrap yourself in the flag, to no longer name your enemy as a racial enemy, name it as a political one. And then, you know, then with someone like Trump in office and this kind of politics swirling, you have a path into the mainstream. So, you know, the Proud Boys they've chosen self-consciously to put forward a leader, Enrique Tarrio, who's a Cuban American, a man of color, and to say, look, how can we possibly be a white supremacist movement if we have a Cuban American as our leader? Pete Simi, the great sociologist who studies this movement forever, makes this point in the film, which is skinhead gangs, when they first emerged in the U.S., were not all white. I mean, they had Black and Latino members from the beginning. And this kind of fascist ideology has the ability to be flexible and to incorporate, you know, other people when it's useful and effective. Right. And that is, you know, that's what the Proud Boys are doing. I mean, if you, I think really, I mean, what he says is just meaningless. Like, he's against cancel culture and he's also against a lack of accountability. I mean, really what seems to motivate them is a philosophy of action. They enjoy street fighting against leftists. I mean, and that is, and the Proud Boys give them an opportunity to do that in which they have the support of large swaths of the Republican Party. And they're no longer, you know, ostracized into a tiny corner of the American far right. They, you know, Brian James says that for over three decades of being a white supremacist organizer in Indiana, he's had 20 guys maybe throughout the states consistently through that period, like as part of his groups. Now he says he has 200. I mean, I don't know. We can't take anything he says as literal truth, but it certainly seems clear that in this moment, they have gained a kind of membership they never had before.
And A.C. Thompson, picking up on that, and I kept, as I was preparing this interview, I was thinking of Proud Boys, Boogaloo Boys. Now, boys is spelled differently for Boogaloo Boys, but, you know, it's such a juvenile, frankly, a juvenile name for a group sort of intent on overthrowing the government. What is this boys thing that they're playing with?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. And I think it, I think it's really a point of demarcation between sort of the earlier waves of militias and anti-government groups and white supremacists and the current sort of scene. The earlier groups were absolutely humorless. They were absolutely deadly serious. They were circulating their tracts and their pamphlets. And it was all, you know, war against the government, racial holy war all the time. The newer groups are so steeped in internet culture and so sort of a product of this moment that they are, you know, imbued with a certain level of irony, a certain level of humor, a certain level of, you know, sort of jokiness and silliness that you wouldn't have with those earlier groups. Yeah. However, that humor and silliness belies a very dangerous core. And, you know, with the Boogaloo Boys, they are a anti-government group that quite clearly follows on the heels of the militia movement of the 90s, of the patriot groups that came up in the wake of the Iraq War, like the Oath Keepers and the Three Percenters. And they're a sort of new generation of those movements that they say, we want to violently overthrow the government. We want to kill elected officials and law enforcement officers. And by the way, we're going to do this while wearing Hawaiian shirts and circulating cartoons online.
Well, you know what? I want to play another clip from your documentary, and this is retired FBI John Bennett talking with you, AC, about the Boogaloo Boys and his increasing concern about the threat that they pose. Let's give that a listen. Number four.
So you'll see a lot of them carry. You'll see a lot of them in their Hawaiian shirts because that is, you know, part of their uniform. But generally, there's a lot of wannabe. They want to go out, and they're going to go camping, and they're going to do, you know, they're going to go paintballing so they can get their tactics down. And it really, it's really a bunch of kids playing army. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the easiest thing I can relate it to.
Right.
Except some of them have taken it, no kidding, we're going to go ahead and put live rounds in our guns, and we're gonna do something that's going to be terrible and impact people's lives. They want to be the instigators, the front line of the civil war that's going to happen in this country. And they're convinced we're going to be ready and we're going to be the ones that are going to survive.
Rick Vallee, let me go back to you. And it's always a tricky thing when you interview someone who's, let's say, a white supremacist or believes in government overthrow, and, you know, how much attention you give them, how much credibility you give them as a filmmaker. How should we take what we are being told in this documentary?
Yeah, absolutely. It's an important balancing act to have. So I think what's clear from talking to, you know, the folks in the FBI and law enforcement and elsewhere about this is that is a thing that has always been true, that The threat from militia groups and groups like the Boogaloo Boys is not that they're going to mount an effective insurgency that's actually going to challenge the U.S. government. That's never going to happen. The threat is that within their ranks, they develop another Timothy McVeigh, another actor who is capable of a mass casualty terrorist attack. That's the threat they pose. So the Boogaloo Boys, with all of their ridiculous memes and posturing, they're not an army that's going to challenge anybody. But in their ranks, we have already seen that there is a Boogaloo Boy who is in prison now in California, Stephen Carrillo, for allegedly murdering or assassinating a federal officer in front of the Oakland federal building, and then ambushing and assassinating and killing another law enforcement officer when they came to his home in Santa Cruz County. There's Boogaloo Boys who are in prison now for allegedly conspiring to kidnap the governor of Michigan. There's dozens of Boogaloo Boys who are in jail across the country on other associated weapons and explosive charges. But the nature of the risk is that there is that there's another Tim McVeigh who is being radicalized in the movement at this time and is capable of lashing out in some kind of terrorist attack.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That is Rick Rowley. He is an Oscar-nominated, Emmy-winning director. He reported actually from the Iraq War. He joins us along with A.C. Thompson, who's a senior reporter for ProPublica and a correspondent for Frontline, and has been reporting on hate violence and neo-Nazis since the 1990s. And we've been talking about their new documentary. It's a Frontline ProPublica collaboration. It's called American Insurrection. It airs this week on PBS, and actually you can watch it for free on the Frontline website. And you can also join us. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always pick up the phone and give us a call to join our conversation. And that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Let me play another clip from the film. This is clip number 3, and it's Steve Carrillo, who you just mentioned, Rick Rowley, talking with you, A.C. Thompson, 32-year-old member of the Air Force sergeant, was a member of the Boogaloo Boys, and allegedly shot and killed a federal officer. This was in California. And he is talking with you about, actually talking with a journalist, Gisela Perez Diaca, about the Boogaloo movement. Let's give it a listen.
The Boogaloo movement, it's about people that love freedom, liberty, and they're unhappy with the level of control that the government takes over our lives. Being free to do what you want as long as you don't hurt anyone else.
Aren't you accused of hurting someone?
Oh, that's what I'm accused of. But, back to the example, that's what I wanted to get to, you know, is the freedom of choice, the freedom of expression.
Let me go back to A.C. Thompson, and he, you show video of Patrick Underwood, who reportedly shot, Carrillo in a white van, and it looks like he has shot and killed Patrick Underwood, who was a federal officer at the time. You go to where he is hiding out. Help us understand who Stephen Carrillo is.
Yeah, so Stephen Carrillo, is an Air Force staff sergeant, and he, until recently, was stationed at Travis Air Force Base in Northern California, just north of Oakland and Berkeley. And he's a guy who was assigned to an elite sort of security force called the Phoenix Ravens that the Air Force sent around the world to defend Air Force installations, particularly in sort of hostile environments or in war zones. But in his time in the Air Force, and it's not totally clear how this happened at this point, he became more and more enamored with more extreme variants of libertarian theory and libertarian ideology. And one of those threads that he got deeply enmeshed in is the Boogaloo movement. The Boogaloo boys are absolutely intent on overthrowing the United States government violently through force of arms. They are subscribers to a sort of obscure political idea, which is that of accelerationism, that they might as well, everything's going to collapse. Society's going to collapse, and we might as well just speed that up and bring on the collapse sooner. And what we've seen over the last year is there's this incredibly strong nexus between the U.S. military and anti-government movements like the Boogaloo Boys. While most service members are not into extremism, there is a significant minority that seem to be gravitating towards the Boogaloo Boys. So I, with my team, identified 20 Boogaloo Boys with military connections who are either current or former military, and 13 of those people had been arrested in the last year, like Stephen Creo, on very serious charges, weapons, bombs, plotting to kidnap the governor of Michigan.
Right.
Our colleagues at UC Berkeley identified another 20 airmen who are, 15 of whom are active duty, who are pushing Boogaloo memes and slogans and ideas online on Facebook. And a lot of those people were in Stephen Carrillo's, basically his security unit, or communicated with him online.
Well, let's take another short break and then we'll get back to our conversation again, talking about this new documentary called American Insurrection. It's a collaboration between Frontline and ProPublica, and airs this week on PBS, although you can stream it online at the Frontline website. And it looks at the last 3 years of events leading up to the attack on the U.S. Capitol back in January. AC Thompson and Richard Rowley are our guests. We're going to take a very short break. Do stay with us. Much more after the short break. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We're talking about a new Frontline ProPublica documentary, American Insurrection, and it examines the rise of violent extremist groups over the last 3 years, beginning with Charlottesville and leading up to the attack on the U.S. Capitol. Our guests are ProPublica reporter A.C. Thompson and Frontline director Richard Rowley. A.C., let me go back to you and... how much do you think the pandemic has fed some of these right-wing, extremist, violent groups in that you've got governments, whether actually largely state governments, shutting down, Michigan being the sort of perfect example of that, shutting down and, you know, telling people they can't go to work and they can't leave their homes, and making the government really a target for a lot of criticism. What role do you think the pandemic has played?
The pandemic has been a major radicalizing factor, and I think we should be just completely honest. Look, the federal government, the state governments, in many ways failed the American people. We lost 500,000 people who died, more than 500,000 people, and many, many people lost their incomes, they lost their jobs, they found themselves really in desperate situations without, in many cases, a lot of support from the government. So what, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. And so, you know, and it's all been incredibly dramatic. You know, it's all been incredibly difficult. When you tell people suddenly that they can't go and live their normal lives, there's going to be reaction to that. And, you know, obviously, I'm somebody that got COVID. It was horrible. It was absolutely disastrous. Yeah. And made me very, very, very ill. So I'm absolutely aware that there was a need to have these very, very serious restrictions on people's freedoms. But that, without great explanation and without all the support that people needed, I think was very apt to be a radicalizing factor in some places. But beyond that, we have this entire media ecosystem, this social media ecosystem that is just laden with conspiracy theories, with misinformation, with bogus arguments. And there was a portion of the population that has gravitated to all of that in this time of crisis and trauma.
Let me read a couple of emails, Rick, and give you a chance to respond. One from Ryan, he says, can you please have your guests clarify that not all skinheads are racists? The way he's speaking about them leaves the unknowing person to believe that every skinhead is a racist, which is completely false. There was a large movement called Sharps Skinheads Against Racial Prejudice. Is there a short answer to that question? So we got a lot of comments and questions, and I do want to get to some more clips as well. But go ahead, Rick.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great question. I'm glad that was raised. Yes, it's totally true. Skinheads Against Racial Prejudice was an incredibly important movement. It's neo-Nazi skinhead gangs that are the problem. And that was the movement that Brian James was a part of.
And just following up on what happened in Michigan, and this was the Wolverine. What was their name, Rick? The Wolverines?
The Wolverine Watchmen.
The Wolverine Watchmen, they go to the Capitol. They want to kidnap the governor of Michigan. They want to put her on trial for treason. This is all pandemic related. As you describe in this film, this was kind of a dress rehearsal for what happened in Washington. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, the parallels between what happened in Michigan in the spring and summer and then what ended up happening in the Capitol are really kind of stark. I mean, you have a series of rallies that are whipped up and encouraged by then President Trump. I mean, he tweets, liberate Michigan, liberate, Virginia, in support of these protests that are happening. And there's a series of them, and they become more militant until finally armed militia members basically storm the Michigan Capitol, disrupt the legislative session. There's footage on the inside of them chanting, shouting, calling them traitors. We spoke to some legislators there who were, really kind of traumatized by that whole experience. But then you look months later you see a similar group of people who are, again, encouraged by then President Trump to bring that kind of struggle and energy inside the U.S. Capitol. There's that protest element to it. But underground, what is also happening amongst the militia members and groups that are storming the Capitol is they're plotting and organizing a much more serious and violent, allegedly organizing a much more serious and violent kind of plot, where they plan to kidnap the governor of Michigan from her vacation home, put her on trial, and potentially, in some of the FBI affidavits, execute her for treason. It's a huge kind of plot that was disrupted by the FBI in October, a month before the election. An interesting thing about it, too, is that the Justice Department at the time, William Barr and the Trump Justice Department, barely made any noise about it at all. The Attorney General didn't even mention it. I mean, a massive operation like this, which, again, shows how the Trump DOJ had been politicized and pointed against left-wing groups instead of right-wing groups.
Let me play one more clip. This is clip number 5, and it's former counterterrorism official in the Trump administration, Elizabeth Newman, and she's discussing her efforts to warn the White House of the rising threat of far-right movements. But she says that they were only interested in Antifa and Black Lives Matter. Let's give it a listen, and then, AC, I'll give you a chance to respond.
Does Antifa exist? It's not an organization, it's a movement. You have groups of people that associate with them. Do they show up at protests? Sure. Is it a massive conspiracy to overthrow the U.S. government and kill a lot of people? No. You know where that is? It's on the right. It's in the white supremacist movement. It's in the anti-government militia movement. It's in the Boogaloo Boy movement. It's not in the anti-fascist movement.
AC, you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a thing that we've been hearing a lot about as we've been talking about this film, is people will call into radio shows and they'll say, what about Antifa? What about Black Lives Matter? And here's the truth, is there were a lot of demonstrations for racial justice last year. Some of them got crazy. Some of them got out of control. There were violent incidents at some of them. There was property destruction. That was not cool. But what you haven't seen come out of those incidents are federal counterterror cases. And I don't think that's because the federal government wasn't looking. I think that's because there just is not something there. So I think, you know, you can say, absolutely, there, you know, and we showed in our film, there were protests that got out of control that became violent. Absolutely. But is there are there organized groups that are planning to violently overthrow the government within the racial justice movement? Well, that does not seem to be the case.
Let me play one more clip from the film, and this is Mike Dunn. He is a self-described Boogaloo boy, at least in this documentary, and he is talking with you, AC, about the assault on the U.S. Capitol. Let's give that a listen, number six.
So in your mind, what changed for the Boogaloo movement on Wednesday?
We realized that we're a lot closer to a revolution. Our recruiting and interest went completely through the roof as well. They're beginning to understand that the only answer is revolution.
Proud Boys didn't wear yellow and black. The Boogs are not wearing Hawaiian shirts. Do you think we're in like a kind of new phase of the struggle?
I think that people are learning and adapting. I think we're definitely looking at armed insurrection. Many of us in this movement, myself and a lot of other young people like me, have come to grips with the fact that death is a reality. It's coming. We just want ours to count.
AC, Mike Dunn did not go to the insurrection on January 6th. And I believe you say in the documentary, no one knows exactly where he is at this point. Does that tell us anything about him or about the Proud Boys or about this movement at all?
You know, there has been what we've seen over the last 18 months or so are, you know, many, many arrests of members of the Boogaloo Boy movement. And I think some of those people are laying low. I think that's part of why Mike Dunn is laying low, because people all around him, people he has publicly supported, have been wrapped up on federal charges. And I think that is going to be a thing that we see going forward, is some of these movements will be beaten down by litigation, by federal arrests. Some of them will likely reconstitute themselves and take on new shapes and morph and mutate the way Rick's been talking about, and we'll see a new incarnation of them in the months and years ahead.
Here's a related email to you, Rick, from Christopher, who says, is this now here to stay? Has it reached the exponential curve, or will changing the channel off of Trump and onto Biden work as a way as we stay vigilant fighting back against these militias? I mean, there are millions of people in this country who don't think Biden is the legitimate president, but nonetheless, he is the president of the United States, a very different kind of president from Trump. Do you see this movement sort of going... and we're sort of seeing the end of the pandemic, and people are some people are able to go back to work, and the economy is opening up. Do you see this movement sort of shrinking down as a result of that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, the thing is, I think it's important to recognize there are two strands, you can make a typology of two distinct strands inside the far right movement that have been there forever inside white supremacist and far-right extremist groups. And that is one strand that sees themselves as vigilantes, doing things the police can't do to defend the social order that they see there. That's the Klan, right? That's the kind of role that they imagine for themselves, not as revolutionaries, but as vigilantes supporting the status quo. Then there's another strand of it that sees them that emerged after of the far right, that emerged mostly after the Vietnam War, and then was the heart of the first wave of militia movements that included Tim McVeigh. And that's the insurrectionist strand that sees themselves as overthrowing the state. During the Trump era, we saw a massive expansion of this vigilante wing, right? And we saw it push into the mainstream and incorporate millions more people who had not been, you know, connected to far right ideologies before. With Trump gone, you know, or at least gone from office, this vigilante wing is going to lose a lot of its reason for existence, right? But there is the danger that elements inside that movement are drawn into more militant insurrectionary violence. So on the one hand, you know, this vast pool of Americans who came to believe that the government was illegitimate, that, you know, this election is fake. I mean, that pool is perhaps going to shrink without Trump having the bully pulpit that he has. But if you look back, every single Democratic presidential victory from since Clinton has triggered or at least correlated with a rise in far right extremist mobilization and militia activity. Every single one. And now we have a Democratic sweep of the houses of government combined with this massive mobilized pool of the far right in the street. So it's a very dangerous moment we're entering into that's full of political risk.
And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. AC Thompson, let me go back to you. And in this documentary, we see that members of various police departments have signed up with some of these violent groups. We've got members of the military as well. And I noticed that Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, this was just a couple of days ago, and I'm quoting from the Washington Post, released an order to essentially take steps to root out extremists within the military. How effective do you think that can be as someone who's kind of followed these groups, whether they just go underground, they're not so vocal and outspoken, or is it possible to root them out?
You know, I want to say, first off, when it comes to the military, I am struck by the seriousness of their approach at this moment. And we'll see if they're successful and we'll see if they stick with it. But to be clear with you, you know, when I've reported on this in the past, the military has really downplayed the importance and significance of extremism within the ranks. They basically kept telling me, like, look, there's no problem. And I'll come to them and I'll say, hey, except here's a neo-Nazi guy who is a Marine and he's a member of a terrorist organization that wants to destroy the United States. And here's video of him beating somebody up in Charlottesville. And, you know, it was really like, it's not a problem here. And I would say, look, you can go back decades and you see this link between certain members of the military and these extremist movements. What you're getting out of the Pentagon now is very different. So one of the early things that Secretary Austin did was order mandatory trainings for everyone in the military, civilian or somebody who's in a combat role, and that this training was going to be on extremism and what to look for, what it is, how to deal with it, and that this was going to have to happen within 60 days of his order. That was unprecedented. That was quite unusual. Perhaps more important is this new order that comes down from the Department of Defense, from the center of the military complex, that says we are going to revise our guidelines around extremism and we're going to make this a lot more clear what is acceptable and what is not, because the current guidelines, the current rules are pretty vague.
You know, we could go on, but we have to end our discussion. AC Thompson, Rick Vallee, thank you for joining us. Thank you for making this documentary.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. Rick Vallee is a filmmaker, director of this new Frontline documentary, American Insurrection. I should add, he's an Oscar-nominated, Emmy Award-winning director, and he did report from the Iraq War. AC Thompson, senior reporter with ProPublica, a correspondent for Frontline, and has been reporting on neo-Nazi groups since the 1990s. And again, American Insurrection is streaming on the Frontline website, and it's free to everyone to watch. Thank you so much for joining us on Radio Times. For more information about the show, go to whyy.org/radiotimes. You can also download a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Adam Staniszewski, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscowain. Thank you for joining us.